Welcome to this RiskMap 2016 podcast, one of a series Control Risks is producing that look ahead to the business environment in the coming year. In this recording, Michael Moran, Managing Director of Global Risk Analysis for the Americas, talks to our analyst Daniel Sachs about Cuba.
Among the places where 2016 is likely to be quite different than the year that preceded it is the island of Cuba. As you know, since December 2014, the United States and Cuba have had diplomatic ties, something they had not had since the Cuban Revolution. Many decades of economic embargo have strained ties over the years, and since December 2014, the Obama administration has been using its executive power to eat away at the embargo, easing sanctions on Cuba and creating some tangible, if limited, opportunities for U.S. companies in specific sectors. Well, joining me is Daniel Sachs, Senior Control Risk Consultant, who handles our Cuba analysis. In this context, what is the Cuban government's own strategic objectives for the economic reform and for investment?
Sure, Mike. So since 2008, President Raul Castro has taken a series of measures aimed at tweaking the economic model that's in place, whether that's introducing a new foreign investment law in 2014 or bringing in economic reforms to increase the size of the private sector. And what this really is about is a set of pragmatic moves aimed at improving the lot of your average Cuban, whilst also at the same time easing the fiscal pressures on the state. And the hope is that by easing the position of your average Cuban, you're diffusing at the source potential sources of unrest in the future. Even fostering a closer relationship with the United States is also about getting pragmatic, tangible concessions out of the state, and we've already seen that in 2015, and likely to see more in the coming year. I think it's fair to say that none of these moves represent any greater move towards a free market economy. Rather, it's a pragmatic set of measures aimed at ensuring the long-term survival of the regime, arguably probably a move towards a mixed economy state such as China or Vietnam.
Well, let's talk about succession now and political risk in Cuba. President Raul Castro is slated to stand down in 2018, with Miguel Diaz-Canel, a party loyalist widely regarded to be the likely successor. So what are some of the challenges he's going to face, and do we see any significant risks to regime stability in this period?
Well, I think the first thing to say that whoever the successor is, if that's Miguel Diaz-Canel or someone else, will have to carefully and artfully guide the country through the largest economic changes since the revolution, as well as managing closely the increased political cooperation with the United States and the detente with the U.S. politically, whilst avoiding a crisis of legitimacy. It's fair to say, obviously, Miguel Diaz-Canel, he doesn't herald from the military. He's not of the era of great sort of leaders from revolutionary leaders. In fact, he was born after the revolution. So he's going to have to manage all of this, also a relationship with the military as well as rising popular expectations associated with the economic reforms and the privatization of some areas of the economy. That said, we do not see any credible risks to overall regime stability. I think the first thing to say is that Miguel Diaz-Canel is a known quantity. He was molded in the image of Raul. He's a party loyalist. And also Raul retains the right to if it's particularly politically sensitive at the time of succession, of actually staying on in some either formal or informal capacity. At the same time, and you'll see this in 2016, the state is likely to introduce a raft of reform measures aimed at placating the population, political reforms, that is. However, again, these are pragmatic moves and do not represent any greater moves towards a liberal party democracy.
So you've spent some time in Cuba recently. Let's touch on the operating environment for investors beyond the embargo. What are some of the key challenges for companies as they face the idea of doing business in Cuba?
There's a range of concerns that were echoed to me during my time in Cuba, speaking to both local and foreign companies operating there. I think, first of all, the key concern is the perception of a lack of access to independent judicial recourse in the event of a dispute with a state entity, particularly in a joint venture. Secondly, you've got a prohibitively high labor costs associated with a sort of distorted labor contracting system that exists in Cuba for foreign companies looking to do business there. Also serious concerns over outstanding property claims. And then, of course, you've got deficient infrastructure, whether that's telecoms or physical infrastructure as well.
So, Daniel, in sum, what is the low-hanging fruit in Cuba in terms of opportunity for U.S. companies?
Well, I think there are clearly, in 2016, there are some tangible, if limited, opportunities in some certain niche sectors. And we've already seen that in recent weeks, a recent announcement, for example, that Sprint will be operating a roaming contract over in Cuba. Also, most recently, the U.S. bank Stonegate announced that it will also provide banking and financial services in Cuba as well. And you're likely to see a continuation and increase in some of these key sectors in 2016.
Well, Daniel Sachs, Senior Consultant for Control Risks, thank you very much.